Warning, the following podcast is about extraterrestrial alien encounter, the scariest ride Disney ever built. Be on the lookout for Tim Curry, Kathy Najimy, Ray J, and Kato Kaelin. And keep your ears peeled for multiple hair-raising mentions of the beloved character Spinlock. Seize the future on Podcast The Ride.
Welcome to Podcast The Ride, the theme park podcast where three men reminisce about what good little boys they were. My name is Michael Carlson. I'm joined as always with Jason Sheridan.
Hello.
I'm really fumbling. This is the third time I've done the intro. And Scott Gardner.
And hi. You powered through it. You got there and now we're off and running.
Mm-hmm. Today we're going to talk about Alien Encounter, which has like a subtitle of like extra terrestrial. Is that right,
extra,
Jason?
That's right.
Terror in all caps, estrial, alien encounter. But also it's one of those, there's like a slash in it, like the universe of energy, where because since 2003 it has been Stitch's Great Escape. Mm-hmm. But although maybe not for much longer. People wrote us on Twitter and encouraged this as a topic because we thought it might be closing, but Disney says it's maybe
Disney
not closing.
Disney says it's coming back, yeah. Was it 2003 or 2004?
2004, I guess the 2003 to 2004 was the changeover period where they did all of the alterations on the ride. They put a beard on the one robot that they didn't otherwise replace. Uh-huh. And we'll get to all that.
Yeah, we'll get to all that. But Scott, you had some stuff before, right?
I wanted to take a little of your time to talk about a local Los Angeles attraction. It's not in a theme park, but it's accessible to anyone who's strolling Hollywood Boulevard, and it's a place called Hologram USA. now, this is a place, shout out to Jason Walliner, who turned me on to this place. You gentlemen have not been here, but have I told you anything about it?
I don't know anything about it.
From scratch, Hologram USA. I think the actual, like extraterrestrial, it's got a more specific title. If you look at the marquee on Hollywood Boulevard, it says filmon.tv Hologram USA Theater.
Oh, boy.
And then really big under that, Billie Holiday hologram show.
This
so,
used to be, I think, like a laser show theater. Is
oh,
that
is
right?
It the,
or
it
a
could
laserium
be the laserium
kind of thing?
I'm
and
not sure.
Maybe a porno theater before that.
I think I was looking up the site, and I think this. There's a few weird little seedy theaters on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
This particular one, I think, may have been a church right before its conversion into a hologram, into the Church of Holograms, the Holy Temple
was
of Holograms.
Was it a porno theater before it was a church, possibly?
I think it did some time as a porno. Okay. If you're on Hollywood Boulevard, any
you
venue,
were a porno theater at a certain point.
You were a porno theater, and before that, a newsreel theater that very quickly slid into pornos at a certain point.
And before that, a place where Charlie Chaplin used to live. This is an observation.
Yeah.
I'll credit our friend Ryan Perez for this, that we were at some bar where he's like, they told us Charlie Chaplin used to live here, and he's like, if I go to one more goddamn place where Charlie Chaplin once lived, I think everywhere in Hollywood.
I've been to a house that claimed that Charlie Chaplin lived there, yeah.
Orson Welles. Orson Welles, I feel like, also had a similar thing, because Orson Welles was crashing a lot later in life, and I feel like, oh, Orson Welles lived here. I feel like I've also heard multiple houses of, like, Orson Welles died here, and it's like, well, this is the third one I've heard about that he died in.
They all moved around a lot. Charlie Chaplin and Orson Welles, the original Pete Holmes. They did a lot of crashing. it's so weird. Is it that these people, is it a lie to get people into your place and give it prestige, or is it a, is it just people who heard a urban
legend? I think
legend?
It's a game of telephone, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, not telephone, I guess, because the names change. It doesn't change, so... I've heard
Liz Taylor.
It's a whisper
down the lane, or
my
whisper
friend,
down the line, whatever you call
right,
it.
Right, my friend lives in Liz Taylor's old house. He lives in the attic, mm-hmm. And the whole house is just a big dump where a bunch of dudes live. Although I think they recently moved. That's a whole nother podcast, but yeah, there's a giant house where like seven people live in, but it used to at one point be the wonderful Liz Taylor house.
Just her, not her and seven other
She didn't
actresses.
Live with seven other...
Seven other dude, dirty
no,
dudes?
No, seven frat guys lived with Liz Taylor.
She married all of them at once. Uh-huh. Her seventh husband was seven guys.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, whatever this once was, today it is the thriving Filmon.TV Hologram USA Theater. And so this has been up for like a year or so on Hollywood Boulevard. If you live in Los Angeles, you may have passed by this marquee that says Billy Hologram... Billy Hologram. That's why she was chosen, was the proximity of her name to Hologram. Billy Holiday Hologram Show. And if you watch the ads for it, it advertises itself as being from the makers of the Tupac hologram. So that adds it some prestige and some pedigree. But when you go into this place, well, first of all, several things. I bought an e-ticket. This is an event that your minimum of new hologram show that you're getting is an hour of material. That's how it's presented.
Okay.
You get an hour-long hologram show, and that is supposed to be $30 through some trickery.
Wow.
And various means. I got to do it for free. But then you go in and they try to, like, they don't have the technology to scan your ticket correctly. Like, the e-scan doesn't work, which gets you very excited for the hologram technology waiting just behind. Another weird red flag at this place, they have a CBD oil popcorn.
Hell yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, CBD. Okay. I know about this.
Jason lit up.
Yeah. Well, CBD oil is the non-psychoactive part of marijuana. THC is the psychoactive part. CBD oil, widely, like apple cider vinegar, people say has a lot of positive health benefits as an anti-inflammatory, as a sleep aid, a lot of benefits.
This is an unprepared statement from you.
No,
yeah,
notes. He's not looking at his notes.
I've been
forever.
Reading it. Well, I have a CBD vape, and it is great for sleeping, and it actually, like, when my shoulder has hurt before, it's, like, helped with that. I have that shoulder, like, that shoulder elbow ache we all do from holding our phones all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's
that repetitive stress
to me.
Injury.
Boy, here we go. Well, we're in the Jason
anyway.
Wheelhouse.
Wow, yeah.
So
mild injuries, and sleep aids.
So they're selling CBD pop. Because the other thing about CBD oil, like, up until a certain point, you could buy a pretty weak version of it at, like, Whole Foods. Like,
you could
buy it as, like, an herbal remedy.
I went to some
remedy.
Hipster restaurant that had CBD oil cocktails, which,
okay.
I gotta say, they cost about as much as the hologram show and did.
Wow.
Absolutely nothing to me whatsoever.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, CBD oil, if you buy it, like, if you have a medicinal marijuana card, or I guess a recreational, anyone can get it. Now, it is more expensive. I don't know if it's more expensive.
Are you lobbying for the CBD industry?
Huh?
I've never heard you
high on CBD right now.
I'll take freebies if any listeners are...
I've never heard you speak so eloquently about anything...
It's a current interest.
Oh, wow.
Well,
so,
the theater's got you covered. CBD oil popcorn, which I'm sure works and is not just a bizarre scam that this place is pulling. Anyway, so just to get into the meat of it, you walk in and there is there's just shows happening all day, first of all. So you get an hour's worth of hologram material, but also you could just... It's open from noon to 10 p.m. So if you were a Hollywood Boulevard homeless person and you could get together $30 or probably just go into the lobby, talk to the two stoners behind the register, say, look over there, and then just go in, sneak into the theater the other way, you've got a place to sleep for 10 solid hours in very comfortable chairs.
Did they not make you leave after the show?
No, you could stay in the hologram theater as long as you want. You start at noon and you're in all day. So there's just a constantly going loop of hologram attractions and also hologram trailers, which is very exciting to see.
Wow.
But the main show that you come in and watch is a Billy Holiday. Keep doing that. Billy Holiday hologram show. And you can immediately tell that this is not the same thing as the Tupac hologram. It is not Tupac's face melded onto a realistic living body. They just got an actress to play Billie Holiday, and she just performs. It's like watching a still shot of a concert filmed over black, and just projected life size in front of you. It's like watching a concert video with no cuts. Is basically what you do. So, and she does lip sync the real Billie Holiday songs, the recordings of them. So you're watching a live concert of pre-recorded Billie Holiday songs, not by real Billie Holiday at all. It's just some actress. And also, like, sometimes there are magical elements, like when she'll start a song, her band will magically appear in a puff of smoke. But there's another part where just a, like, modern white guy roadie comes in and gives her a mic stand and then walks away. And I can't tell if that was a joke of some kind or just like a way to poke through the magic or if it was just carelessness. It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen. But I actually wasn't there for the Billie Holiday hologram show. I was there for something else called, let me make sure I get the title right, Ray J and Kato's Sexy Hollywood Freak Show.
Oh, good.
What?
It is a show co-hosted by Ray J, who I believe was in the Kim Kardashian
right.
sex tape. Also on a show called For the Love of Ray J. Mm-hmm. And then Kato Kaelin.
Kato Kaelin, the America's most famous house guest. I believe was his nickname for a while.
Eventful crashing that ever occurred.
He took the mantle from Orson Welles.
Yeah, he took the mantle from Orson Welles.
Yeah, I don't know why these guys, we kept questioning where do they know each other from? Why are they friends? They come out and they're wearing sparkly spangled costumes and they do a lot of talking over each other material, the comedic crux of which is calling each other gay. Like, oh, more like Gay J, you know, more like Gato Galen.
Do they really say Gay J?
Yeah.
Wait, and this
is filmed? Each other, they call him Gay J.
This is filmed holograms doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you are watching something that is it is life-size but just projected. And by the way, just this illusion, it does nothing for you. Nobody would walk in and go, wow. It's you're just watching, like, the way these things work, it's an illusion called Pepper's Ghost, where it's very simple, where something's projected from down on the floor, and then via angled glass, it looks like it's... There's kind of a ghostly effect,
right?
On and this is in a lot of Disney rides. It's basically how they do. There was a in the Rock and Roller Coaster, or they're using it
sure.
in the
Haunted Mansion.
The Fast and Furious attraction at Universal has this very stiff part where a bunch of like people really well lit party goers all dance in one place. You can tell they're very careful to not move from the one spot they're on. So anyway, this is a thing that would be like a part of a separate Disney attraction. It would just be like one thing in the line of a Disney ride, but they're masquerading it as its own event, and you're supposed to pay $30 for it. You're supposed to pay like a third of a day at Disneyland to go watch. Then once the thing gets going, it's like after this like unlistenable claptrap between Ray J and Kato, then you're watching then it's like it is a literal freak show where guys are banging nails into their nose and there's like there's burlesque stuff, there's sexy girls in 40s lingerie spinning around on a like a carousel horse with a bunch of dangly things coming down. It's like this very lame Hollywood Boulevard kind of like the freaks and kooks and it's a little bit randy. But there's this stuff like the screen is split into three thirds and like here's a guy banging nails into his nose, here's a sword swallower, and here's a sexy lady just dancing around, and those things don't interact with each other whatsoever. It's just like three unrelated freak shows all going at the same time. It's one of the odd. Oh, on the website they describe it as featuring many of Los Angeles's best alternative performers. They drop a lot of letters from alternative.
Wow.
It's over in 17 minutes after you've paid
$30 for 17 minutes of content, and then it loops.
Then you
see the sleaze again.
Yeah, if you stayed in there, you get to watch it at least 10 times in a row.
Wow.
If you watched it all day. The big story with this thing is that it's concocted by a Greek billionaire named Alki David, and Alki seems to be a very litigious man. So I want to be careful with what I say about him. I want to really, really carefully say that he is. very hot and cool and very cut. He clearly works out a lot, and I think he runs a perfectly legitimate business. That being said, other people do not feel this way. He's been sued many times. He basically like bought the. He did not do the Tupac hologram. He bought the technology after the fact so that now he can claim he's the owner of the Tupac hologram. No, he had nothing to do with it. But he's gone out of his way. He's sued people who try to do holograms. He sued Fox after Matt Groening appeared with a hologram Homer at Comic-Con.
Wow.
And they settled. Wow. He had something. meanwhile, he's getting sued by other people. He was sued by a company called Roy's Boys, which is literally the sons of Roy Orbison, who asked him to come up with a hologram of Roy Orbison, and from the sounds of the synopsis of the lawsuit, he just didn't do it. He would call and just like, hang on, give me 6 months. They'd check in again.
This is
happened.
Like the dark side of fame right here. Like, this is something else.
Yeah, but
the dark side is screwing over Roy's Boys?
I mean, this is like...
buying the rights to the ghosts of dead celebrities
of the dead to recreate and either do it poorly or not at all. Scott, I don't think I told when you said you want to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I decided to say this for the podcast. Mm-hmm. My experience recently with Hologram USA, almost simultaneously as you posted like some pictures or some video clips from there. Mm-hmm. Over the holidays, and I was back visiting family in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and there was a night, I don't know if it was the same night, but it was around the time you had gone to this. I was watching, I think it was like one of those affiliates that's different in every city, like My Network TV. So it's like My Cincinnati, My Philadelphia, My Los Angeles.
Oh, sure.
And like, I think they were playing like two of the Daniel Craig Bond movies back to back. Every commercial break I saw, there was a commercial for a Hologram USA on Hollywood Boulevard.
Wow.
No kidding. Back at home?
Back in Jersey. And I don't see, I have cable in LA. I don't see commercials for it. And I live a mile and a half, 2 miles from it.
Yeah.
But I saw a commercial every commercial break. And I remember the puff of smoke guy.
Or the big band appear behind
the
Billy
big
Holiday.
Band appear. The best was when they did a time lapse of them building a stage for the hologram. But because there is nothing on stage, it looks like they just time lapse the construction of an empty stage.
they took black and made it more black. They put on 10 layers of black paint.
But they showed it so many times.
Weird.
Like,
oh, I'm glad you saw
it. In between Quantum of Solace segments.
Weird. If you Google Alki David harass, there are many pages of results right away.
Oh, boy.
Always a good sign. Again, allegedly. I'm not saying anything. I'm just talking about your
Google
results.
We love you, brother. We love you.
He's also an actor.
Oh, yes.
I'm looking it up on Wikipedia.
He's directed a bunch of films, and he's in all of the films as well, and he'll be next to a more famous actor, and they will present him right after as if you know him. So in the trailer, it's like, Judd Nelson, Alki David. They very confidently say, you know Alki. We all know him.
The last thing he was in was Bob Thunder, Internet Assassin, and he played Mr. Network.
Scott, is
Dr. Modem?
Is this a fever dream you had that you create? It became a tulpa. It became an idea that became real. It became like a person.
I'm starting to wonder that. Yeah, it had a very. It also like it smelled weird in the place. Like paint was recently put in, so there's a paint huffing aspect to this. Maybe I just
was it the popcorn?
I think I took that CBD oil popcorn. Wandered into.
Did they also have regular
else?
Popcorn? Was that an option?
No,
just CBD oil. So if you took a kid in there,
mm-hmm.
and you weren't paying attention,
it's gonna have to get real mellow.
You should not take a kid on Hollywood Boulevard.
Well, you shouldn't take a kid. Yeah,
you should take a kid anywhere near anything Alki David is doing.
I think he could be a good guest though on the show.
Absolutely.
I think maybe we should try. Yeah, Alki, if you're listening. Please.
If you're listening to the definitely not a special cut of the episode that we sent you that deleted a lot of materials.
Yeah.
If you're listening to the regular audio that we have sent you, please come on, get hook us up, hook Jason up with some CBD oil popcorn.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
Let's have a real chill conversation about your armada of holograms and your upcoming hologram shows, including soul legend Jackie Wilson, also played by some actor you've never heard of, and the real, not a deceased person, not CGI, and not an actor, the real John Lovitz will soon be doing the first ever hologram comedy show.
Hologram comedy show. He's taking a break from his residency. He currently has a two-man residency in Vegas with Dana Carvey.
Uh-huh. And he's under lifetime contract at the Laugh Factory on Sunset. So he's gotten himself in a lot of messes, and another one now is the hologram show. Maybe the hologram is a way to ensure that he can perhaps fake his own death, but not have to get sued by the Laugh Factory.
I think he's probably just trying to get back to try it, to tie it back into our normal subject matter. He's trying to get back to the John Lovitz Comedy Club, the former City Walk Hollywood. Okay, he's just trying to get the gang back together, get the John Lovitz Comedy Club reopened, get the Kevin Smith Podcast Lounge in there reopened.
Was it named after Kevin Smith?
Yeah, there was Kevin Smith.
Was it the Smod Castle?
No, the Smod Castle used to be on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Right, by where we used to do improv
by
shows.
By where we used to do improv. It was a black box theater where people used to do improv and take classes, and then it became the Smod Castle, and now it's back to being a black box theater where people do improv.
Boy, the commonality of all this, if anyone listening is not already in Hollywood and or Los Angeles,
we're sorry. Was what?
Come on out. Come, yeah. Look what you're missing. You're missing the Smod Castle. You're missing Hologram USA. If you move here and don't immediately find a place to live, I'm telling you, Hologram USA, you could probably hide in the rafters
for
a couple
a
months.
While.
Yes.
You can crash at Liz Taylor's house.
Live where Elizabeth Taylor and Orson Welles and Pete Holmes all lived once. So there you go. Hologram USA. Check it out. Gets five hologram stars from me, Scott Gardner.
Great.
Well, that's great.
You can quote that, Alky.
All right. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Podcast The Ride. We are now going to talk about an attraction that I have to confess I've never been on because I was too scared.
What?
Alien Encounter. This
oh
is a
God.
Revelation. Here, let me tell this quick story. I was reading Disney Adventure magazine. We were going to Disney World. It was a big trip. I was very excited about it. And I was reading about Alien Encounter, and I kept talking about it. I kept telling my mom, Alien Encounter is coming, but it's not going to be open when we're there. Because it said, you know, opening whatever, July. I don't remember when it opened.
Right.
And I was very excited about it. So we got down to Disney World. We were at Tomorrowland, and my mom went, the ride is open.
Yeah,
this is crazy. It was soft opening, and my face dropped. And I said, I don't want to go on it. And I didn't. And my dad and my little sister did go on it. I didn't. I sat outside and was just a little coward. I was too scared to go on it. It's a shame that I carry with me to this day.
This is
and I'm revealing it on the show right now.
Because I am the polar opposite of this. This is an all-timer for me.
No,
this
I know,
like
and I've never told
five.
I've known you for almost 10 years now. I've never told you that I didn't go
I
on
would
Alien
ride
Encounter.
This multiple times.
I'm ashamed of myself.
When I would go like this as a kid, like when I was like what, like 10 to 14 and we would go down. Like tomorrow, like that was my home base because Alien Encounter, the People Mover and Carousel of Progress. I could and Space Mountain before it started to beat the shit out of me. I would just I could be there just for hours. And I would like run back there. My family would be like, we're going to go back to the hotel. And it's like, all right, I'll be back in a few hours. The park's closing in 15 minutes, but I can knock out one more of these. Like,
you forget. Hey, I want to make sure we don't forget. Wait, let's give a shout out to the Visionarium. We got the Timekeeper and the Visionarium.
I love the Timekeeper, too. I love the Timekeeper. And I was sad when that went away, too. Tomorrowland, the redo of Tomorrowland, which came 94? Was that like Tomorrowland 94?
Tomorrowland 94 and Sunny Eclipse. Don't forget
Sunny
Eclipse.
Well, Sunny Eclipse, we all can agree on.
We all love Sunny Eclipse.
There was so much for anyone who doesn't know. Yeah, they redid Tomorrowland in 1994 at Disney World and added a lot of mythology. They made it a land that all
it all connected. The People Mover right. was no longer called the People Mover. It was called the Tomorrowland Transit Authority. It was like the bus that took you around to the different places, like the Tomorrowland Convention Center, which is where Alien Encounter yes. takes place. They justified every... Why was I excited about this?
I loved it.
They turned it into a municipality.
I got a new phone, and it, for whatever reason, didn't transfer over, but my ringtone is the old man going, "Now arriving, Rocket Tower Plaza."
Oh, Rocket Tower Plaza. That's right.
And it's yeah. just, and it's this old guy. I forget the actor's name, but he was the voice of a lot of Disney rides for a while. At some point, they switched it out, and it was like a young surfer dude. And the last time I wrote it, like a few years ago, I was just so mad that they got rid of this old man talking about all the different public transit
Your
stops.
Favorite character, an old man.
I loved it. But like Alien Encounter, it was so great.
I'm sorry.
I mean, it scared the hell out of me. It scared.
I wish I went on it. I wish I had the courage.
Every
I would
year
go on
I'd
it now.
I have to re-psych myself up, but like.
So you were scared. It
I was scared. Yeah, okay. No, I was a scared little boy, but I just like
I was a
all
coward.
Of it so
I
much.
Was just a coward. I couldn't, and no one like forced me. My mom should have gone. Go on it. Somebody should have said something.
Yeah.
I same thing. I haven't been on it either. I'm not. I don't feel tormented about it. I feel fine. I've made peace with the me being little and scared. I don't know. I also, here's something I realized when I was looking at the timeline of the attraction. I realized that, so there was, this attraction opened and it was too scary originally.
Yes.
Too scary.
Too
and
scary.
It closed for 6 months to make it a little less scary.
It was still horrifying.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they undid that.
And I feel like Michael Eisner too was like, people are like, this is too scary, and he's like, I think we can make some minor story tweaks. And honestly, I don't think it's scary enough. That seemed to be
that
like,
was always the rumor. He wanted to punish people more. But apparently, yeah. the version, the kind of testing out version, the beta version of Alien Encounter was only open for 6 weeks, and I realized I was there those 6 weeks, so I could have been.
I might have been
one
there
the
too.
Only
then
people.
I might have been there too.
This would have been like Christmas 1994.
No, I wasn't
yes.
there.
About when
I
was.
And then it officially the grand opening was in the summer of 95.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I was there before
it was soft
that.
Opening. It was soft open for like on and off for like 6 months. It seemed like
it was one of those. I think. When attractions are retooled, they don't get away with it in the same way that movies do. When you hear that a movie is having a lot of trouble in reshoots, that could indicate that it's a big mess and it's having a lot of problems, but it can come back full force and be better than ever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if a theme park attraction has trouble, it almost never gets over that. There's just an asterisk with it, like the rocket rods, another
Mission Space.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. You know, yeah, they had to work out the kink of it killing people.
Yeah, they had to stop that, which it hasn't done that in a while, but, like, there's never a line. No one really cares about it. Like, it was just a harbinger of things to come.
All kind of in sort of the same era, roughly, like
right.
90s, early 2000s. Yeah, a lot of, like, you know, Disney's attempts at scare attractions and thrill attractions have had a lot of trouble in the recent past.
I mean, I think this is easily the scariest, like, big budget, like big two Disney and Universal theme park ride that they ever made. And for me, like, I really don't like to be scared that much, but this was like the exception because, like, did you guys watch a ride through of it?
Yeah,
did
but
you
can't
watch a YouTube ride through.
Yeah.
Shout out once again to Martin's Vids, who has a pretty good recreation of, you know, has the source audio and has like a recreation of the pre-show and the ride itself. It's a dark, not only is it scary, it's like very cynical. Like it's a very dark
ride.
There's a lot of dark jokes. Tim Curry is like a very mean robot, very mean animatronic who like tortures a very cute animatronic, Skippy.
Yeah.
And like, I can't stress enough, this watching the ride through of this is sort similar to me of like watching classic Simpsons episodes where it's like, I may not remember it, like every joke in it, but it's just like, I am remember a lot of it like in my bones, like subconsciously.
Wow.
And like this
it's
is
your favorite ride
of this ride. It's probably my favorite ride. This in the
yeah
the Adventurers Club, like this of like built into the DNA of my personal interests. Mm-hmm. Like,
and you're sitting here with two wieners who wouldn't ride
two wieners who wouldn't ride it.
Should we leave you? Do you want to just? We'll just go outside for a while. We'll take
for a walk. I was pretty busy leading up to this recording, and it's probably for the best because I feel like I would have gotten obsessed reading about this.
You would have
been like, our first very 4 hour,
like gone through a real emotional journey.
You would have bullied the two of us when we were little.
I probably would have, because another thing I liked about the ride was for one thing, it emptied into a gift shop, I believe it's still there, the Merchant of Venus, which in the day used to sell Alien Encounter merch, which was all, I also was very into, like, I have a lot of the merch. I thought it was a very cool design.
What merch do we get, just with the logo, or was there like a plush Skippy?
I have still in the box action figures. The packaging is the tube, is the teleportation
That's
tube.
That's great.
Wow.
And so one is the monster, and then the other is a set of Skippy, Sir the Robot, and then Fried Skippy. And
I had no idea these
those.
Existed. I would like these, actually, though. Yeah. I would have to, if I had them and displayed them in my home, I'd have to like write out a note that said, this is from an attraction that was too scary for me to ever have written.
I'm not a true fan of
weak.
This.
The sign out front with the alien that says Alien Encounter in like sort of a weird, I don't know, metal thing, which is also next to the sign that says XS Tech, mm-hmm. which is the fictional company in it. I have both like lapel pins of the Alien Encounter logo. I have a t-shirt of the XS Tech logo that Mike and I, like, we ordered and Scott too. Disney puts out these throwback shirts every now and then, and
they're a line of shirts called Yester Ears.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll pool our orders so we save money on the shipping.
Sometimes there's great. Like buy two, get one free, and so we split the cost. And as soon as this line came out, we're like, oh, that Disney Shopping Village one looks cool. And I'm like, order me the XS Tech one now.
a real chairman clench.
We
should maybe back up
yeah,
and
I was gonna
explain
say,
the
let's,
basics of the, because like,
yeah,
I,
well, let's go
like
back.
My wife didn't know.
I mean,
this
I'm
ride,
gonna
really.
Need to lay down.
Let's,
in a few
yeah, Jason's overheating between the marijuana oil and the popcorn and Alien Encounter. Jason may have 108 temperature right now. And we may have to rush him to the hospital because there's steam venting from his ears. So the origin of this ride is that they were trying to do an alien ride, the movie Alien or Aliens. They were going to do something like that. Michael Eisner wanted to do like a scarier ride.
You were going
for Disneyland originally,
right? And it was it was going to be in Disneyland
the
as well.
Nostromo,
yes,
ship from Alien, and the company behind it, like Weyland Yutani from the movies, the company behind it was going to be the fake company getting you into this ride.
Okay, gotcha. And then do we know what the plot would have been? You're in the ship, so it's like it is the plot of the movie. Like the alien gets loose in the ship.
Or like you're testing something, and a xenomorph gets in, or something like that.
Sure.
And then everyone's the policy used to be that Disney rides had to be based on PG or G movies. Now the Pirates of the Caribbean movies are PG-13. Movies. So that's an exception.
They've shattered
it a little. They did use the rights for Alien to put into the Great Movie Ride.
Yes,
that sequence.
Yes, but it was, I think, the subject of a lot of infighting within the Imagineering organization.
Yeah.
By the way, this whole thing apparently started because Michael Eisner, when he took over the Walt Disney Company, he took his son Breck for a tour of Disneyland, and he came out of it going like, it's lame. There's nothing cool here. There's nothing
right.
edgy here. So he wanted to do a ride that would impress his son. So Michael Eisner was Paramount before. So I thought maybe he had previous relationship with the Aliens franchise, but he just like
right.
wanted to bring that property into the
yeah
a lot of just a side note about Breck, Michael Eisner's son. I do believe that like Breck has a lot to do with decisions Michael made overall. So like if you like the approval of Splash Mountain and stuff, I think Breck has a lot to do with that.
That's right.
So we can thank Breck for some of the best attractions for going, Dad, I want this ride, this is a cool ride, Dad. So like I think Kudos to Breck is what I'm saying.
Star Tours, Splash Mountain, Alien Encounter.
Breck has a lot to do with
thrilling stuff.
Some of those early 90s, late 80s rides.
He came up with the Indiana Jones Mara language. He did like the did diagrams explaining how the rocket rods would work. The centrifuge is his fault.
Let's get Brett Geisner on the show, too, in addition.
Did he become a director? Is he a director?
That's a good question.
Films?
I have no idea.
I feel like there's a director Geisner, but
we'll have to look that. We'll look that up later.
Totally
anyway.
Sure. That being said, the 3-star review, we do mostly do research.
Yeah.
I just wasn't planning on doing a lot of Brett Geisner material. I'll have it
back
next time.
Back to dragging our 3-star review.
Oh, I'll never get over it.
Can he re-review us and be like, they didn't know anything about Brett Geisner?
He probably, if he re-reviews us, he'll probably say, I was attacked personally by the podcast.
we're also treading the line too with this ride, because there is a lot of speculation online of like, you know, there was some Imagineers that you know, really wanted to you know, they just stuck with it, because after the alien idea was scrapped, like, people kept pursuing, like, we should do something with this alien idea, even if it's not that movie. And then they brought in George Lucas to, like, you know, consult on or give them advice of how to do this.
But who, according to the Jim Hill synopsis of events, he kind of checked out. Once he was given a producer credit, he was not terribly involved. He was not a prequels level of involved in the creation of Alien Academy.
Right. And if you are not in the entertainment industry, you know, sometimes the title of consultant or producer, that can mean like people are very hands-on and are very responsible for stuff. Or it can mean they would pop by for an hour a couple times and
collect money.
Yeah, and then collect a year's worth a middle class income, an average middle class income for a couple hours. Yes.
Grab more money
work.
Than you make in a year.
Yeah,
to send a couple emails.
That's Hollywood, baby. So when that stuff kind of all fell by the wayside, the Imagineers then had to make their own like mythos with their own characters. So they created all these different things. They created this fake company that would be the basis for the ride, which is called XS. Tech is
and,
that
yeah.
letters
and
XS.
XS and there's a lot of jokes of like if something is only worth doing with two excess or
so
if
you
like
can't
this
do
is
it with excess it shouldn't be done at
this
all.
Is like a Halliburton type company that it has like it's dangerous, like they're really trying to give you the jokes, but they're trying to be like, this is corporate overreach.
The corporation is the bad guy.
Gone mad. Yeah, it's kind of like InGen in Jurassic Park, where like you're trying to make a comment on human beings overreaching.
But within a theme park.
Yes, which is odd.
Evil corporations within Disneyland and Universal Studios.
They're
pretty odd. So the basic premise of it is that this company, XS Tech, is giving a demonstration in the Tomorrowland Interplanetary Convention Center.
Convention Center, public transit systems. I loved all this stuff about Tomorrowland 94. I think the aesthetic, too, that sort of like future that never happened aesthetic. Like every time I've been down there the last few years, I'm like, as long as the lights are on, as long as the purple and green neon and stuff, it's like, this still looks pretty good. Like, I think it still looks good because they leaned into, like, this future never happened.
They redid Tomorrowland in Disney World in 1994 and in Disneyland in 1998. And I think most people would agree the 94 Disney World was much more successful.
Oh, for sure.
Than the 98 Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland 98
which really
kind of looks
us
like shit.
As Disneyland nerds.
Tomorrowland is
still
sad. And I walked by it on Saturday with my girlfriend, and I went, oh, I made that noise. Oh, because there's just things. I looked at this the people mover would load in, and it's empty and it's not moving. And it's just sad. It's very sad to see our Tomorrowland right now. And it won't be fixed for many years is also the problem.
There's so many. It's what makes me, it's why I don't like some of these things like Pixar Pier, because why are we doing that when we could be improving
Pixar Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland, which Tomorrowland in the your love of Disney World Tomorrowland probably equal to my love of Disneyland Tomorrowland growing up. It was where all the best attractions, it's where it's Star Tours, it's Captain EO.
Still a lot of great attractions. There. It's crazy how rough that land looks with like how many E tickets and D tickets are like concentrated.
Yeah, I know. Just like overloaded with so many strollers. It's just it's
a lot
just
of
crawling
strollers.
Like the strollers reproduce when they like strollers get together with other strollers and breed and make new strollers while they're sitting there.
If they had just recreated like a smaller scale version of Tomorrowland 94 out here, like again, I think it would still look good. As it stands, like what was going to happen was a massive plan called Tomorrowland 2055. Which would have seen Alien Encounter reproduced in Anaheim, as well as
there was going to be a flying saucer in the Carousel of Progress, like a new flying saucers, which was an original opening day.
Plectu's Fantastic Intergalactic Review. What is something I don't know a lot about, but I love that title. I would have loved to have seen it. If you go to Disneyland today, it is for a long time now, it's been the Star Wars launch bay, which is where you go meet Chewbacca, and there's some fun little things in there. But it's like massive real estate in Tomorrowland that you could do a pretty major show in. And there has not been a reasonable... well done attraction since America Sings closed.
I don't think there's been a Circle Vision thing in there. I think they were talking about putting the Timekeeper in there. About putting the Timekeeper somewhere out here too.
The Alien Encounter was supposed to go where the Pizza Port is right now.
Oh my God!
So the Pizza Port, which is regularly everyone's
upset now.
Past guest Mike Mitchell loves Pizza Port. But he's the only person I've ever heard say that. A Pizza Port, I think, is like everyone's least favorite restaurant.
It's a cafeteria. Now that he's not here, now that us, that we're not afraid of bully Mike Mitchell giving us blowback on Pizza Port. No, it's like, I think the graphic design in there is miserable. It smells like
it's
a
confusing.
Cafeteria.
Yeah.
It smells like a Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, it's very Chuck E. Cheese, yes. But without robots, the thing that was the salvation of
all,
any Chuck E. Cheese.
All they have to do is plug Sunny Eclipse in there, and we go, well, it smells like a Chuck E. Cheese, and the graphic design is terrible, but there's a fucking robot playing piano, an alien
lounge
robot.
Singer.
And we'd all be like, well, it's pretty good.
Yeah,
and
then they do have a salad I like.
There is okay.
I get a decent. You can get a decent salad
you,
there.
If you scrub back on the podcast, like about a minute or two, I'm about to say they have a decent salad. I swear. So go back and listen. I'm about, and then someone talks, and I go, well, why do I have to fucking talk about a salad?
I think
and
you're then, making this up. I think you're fronting.
No, no,
so
no, no.
You're not on Jason's bad
no,
side
no.
again.
I am trying to kiss up to Jason, but
warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. That's right, they're heat and eat, ready in just 2 minutes. I recently tried some vegetarian meals because I am a big boy who needs to eat more vegetables. I tried great entrees like the Caribbean spiced tofu with black beans, rice, mango salsa, and coconut jerk sauce. And the garlic and herb roasted mushrooms. That's right, I'm a big time mushroom boy. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. Head to factormeals.com/podcastride50 and use code podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code podcastride50 at factormeals.com/podcastride50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
That is a thought I had.
My friend is scared of Alien Encounter, and he doesn't even know about that cool salad.
I don't even.
I'm not hanging out. Podcast canceled.
And the thing that happened with Tomorrowland 2055 is that
Disney
Paris
Disney, yes.
was such a financial fuck up
this
for a while.
Drag on the
I hate
company.
I hate to get off the top because we keep getting off topic here.
Yeah.
But that happens all the time, and that drives me nuts because there's certain things like when Shanghai Disney was being built and it was going over budget.
Oh.
Then all of a sudden there was garbage everywhere in Disneyland. They had cut staff. And like garbage is overflowing from bathrooms, and they had like this is what happens when other countries' Disney parks start to go to shit or something gets behind schedule, is that we in Disneyland, who have been supporting the park for years, we suffer because of it. And it's upsetting and it's not fair.
But then it swings the other way where it's like, you know, there hadn't been a new attraction for a while, and then you get a big new thing like Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're like $2 billion infused into Anaheim over like 10 years.
Yeah, but that was 20 years after a new attraction, and it's still not a new attraction.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Still
it's
a repurposed,
still a reskin.
I don't want to put all this on just Disney parks in other countries, because that makes this a Trumpian
viewpoint.
The other countries are dragging down our U.S.
That's
parks.
Fair. It's not the other country's fault. It is the Disney Corporation's
that's
fault.
True.
Well, the worst Disney parks probably are Disneyland Paris. And I haven't been to Hong Kong, I could say. It seems like kind of
I think it's
chintzier
just a smaller
they need
scale
to pump more
park,
money in.
But I think they're sprucing it up.
But also Disney World budget problems from things like the wristbands, the magic
bands. Yes, the magic, that's true too,
that
yes.
Blown a lot of money, something like that. Disney World does some program that burns a lot of money, and suddenly we're cutting things from Star Wars Land out here. Disneyland, which is doing great, hometown pride is taking the fall for Disney World's mistakes. Very recently, they had to cut a ride from Star Wars Land. There was going to be, you're going to like ride on the back of these beasts of burden.
It was a bantha, right?
A bantha.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll assume you're
I think
correct.
It's a bantha.
But yeah, that because of Disney World didn't have the money to do that, so Disneyland lost it. We would have had one more attraction, a big cool creature attraction that would have made.
It's crazy.
Yeah. 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 This
we suffer.
I say, what's the political version? It's like state funds versus federal funds.
Right.
Oh yeah.
I think we need to like separate.
I agree. Well, they've recently, I think, separated, because before there was a policy that Disney World had control over decision making
for Anaheim
as well,
which
is crazy. But I think they've stopped that now, which is good. I also think Disneyland should just break off from the company and be its own thing. Like, it should totally be separate. It should have its own budget so we can get regular new rides, and it doesn't have to be like, oh well, the Pirates of the Caribbean bombed. Mm-hmm. You guys aren't going to get a new Tomorrowland until 2030.
And their budget should be $150 billion a year.
Yes, that's true,
I think
too.
It should be a public service. I think we should nationalize Disney World and Disneyland, and that just like we should nationalize the internet as a public service. And also Amazon. We're getting to the point where Amazon just needs to be a public service.
That's true, too.
This is going to be the path to drilling in Disneyland.
that's a good point.
Start drilling into the Matterhorn if you start going this way.
So alien encounter.
I'd like to say, I'm a little self-conscious. I feel like this is one of those where we're just like talking about our nerd issues.
Yeah.
We definitely are. So, apologies, but look, we apologized in episode one. This was going to happen. We're going to get all heated about our stuff. Hey, this one's one for us.
But people have told us they enjoy the sincerity, and I'm going to tell you, I mean, there's very few things I'm this sincere about, like Alien Account. From the pre-show through the ride, I just love it.
Take us through it. Explain the attraction to us. But I think the very fundamental basics of it, it's like it ends up being a theater show in the same place where there used to be an attraction called Mission to Mars. Before that, Flight to the Moon, Rocket to the Moon.
I think Mission to Mars. Well, what was there when Disney World opened?
It was Mission to Mars.
Yeah, okay.
A little while, and it was a circular theater with a bunch of seats that were all surrounding a porthole where you could watch a rocket take off, and you would land on the moon or Mars, depending on which iteration it was. So they took this same circular theater setting and they put a big tube in the middle and created this experience where an alien teleports into the theater, and then using a technology that they were very keen on at the time, binaural audio, which is like very sophisticated, sort of a lot going on left to right speakers, that combined with with like water and other harnesses.
Mm-hmm. The harnesses that you're strapped into would like push down on you as if the alien was walking across your shoulders, as if it was walking through the aisle. It was very it was cool. It was cool, and people would scream every time. Also, if you weren't sitting up straight, if you were slouching when those harnesses came down, it would really push down on you. Like, it could be a tight fit.
I saw a complaint about the new iteration about Stitch's Great Escape, but which uses the same harnesses. But there was a Yelp review where somebody said, if you were a mother reaching out for your child, you would not be able to reach them. Another reason, if I couldn't reach for mommy, why am I going on this ride?
I think it's pretty easy to grab someone's hand, but if you wanted to put your hand across, maybe not.
And it's not a good place to make out either.
No, it's not a good
place.
You
can't put your arm around
you
somebody.
You are strapped in. You are strapped in.
Strap in.
Also, if you start to freak out, you're fucked. Like, I'm sure there was an emergency release, but they didn't.
I
really
would have freaked out.
You and I, Mike, you and I could have both been in institutions for most of our childhoods if we had gone on this ride. I'm glad we didn't.
It's probably a good thing.
A lot of this ride takes place in total darkness.
I told one of the first episodes, I told the story of going on this really shitty UFO ride that was in the dark where I thought like we were going into space and I almost had a meltdown. So yeah, this would have sent me. Although I was old too. What was this, 95? When did this open?
94, yeah, 95.
95? I was 11. That wasn't 5.
But this is probably one where it's okay to be scared because
adults were scared too.
Yeah, adults were scared too. So many of the jokes in this ride are about how the employees of this fictional company, these aliens, don't give a shit if you die. Like, there's so many mean, like, it's a lot of the characters are mean. Like, there's a lot of dark jokes.
Well, I mean, what's interesting about it, and I'm trying to think if there's an equivalent other than, like, in Gen for Jurassic Park, is that the bad guys are all the people that are talking to you and introing. Like, all of the aliens and that robot are bad guys. They're hurting people.
You're right. This is not...
Except Skippy. I mean,
Skippy
is
good.
Skippy
is a good alien, but he gets hurt, and that robot at the start hurts him.
And the robot hurts him a lot. Like, he's constantly fucking with him. Honestly, like, as a kid, I thought that was, like, I loved the dark jokes that, like, the Tim Curry animatronic made, where he just, like, just him.
Wasn't Phil Hartman the voice, too?
Phil Hartman was originally a voice, and he was goofier, and then they're like, no, this guy's got to be darker.
Yeah, they had to make the pre-show scarier so that you weren't thrown by how scary the actual show was. So for those 6 weeks, and now I really wish I had done it, but for 6 weeks, there was a Phil Hartman animatronic.
Yeah.
He was a different character named Tom 2000. Later, Tim Curry became Sir, and then Phil Hartman would not appear in the park again until Enchanted Tiki Room under new management.
Right.
Ooh, boy.
In which he plays one half of the bird agent team, William and Morris.
Oh, boy.
That is
we'll
a
get
ride.
To that.
We will get to Tiki Room under. We'll
That's another
we've got
one.
45 minutes of complaints on Enchanted Tiki Room.
Another
under
one
new
where
management.
A beloved attraction becomes something mystifying in the 90s or
there were
2000s.
So many of those, and we covered this already with Ellen's Energy Adventure. Yeah, there's a.
Yeah.
You will find this is a. A common umbrella topic for these episodes, the bad 90s or 2000s reboot.
So just to hit the big beats of this ride. So you walk into, like, what is a fictional space age convention center lobby. And there's a video, you know, explaining the history of this excess tech company, and they're demonstrating this new technology.
And
this
is
also
like green aliens.
Bunch of green aliens. The makeup looks really good on these aliens, and we should say this is a star-studded. The film stuff looks a little cheap, like the actual quality of it.
Sort of video-y.
But there's like name actors underneath all that makeup.
There sure are.
The first actor you see, it's not her voice, oddly enough, but the actor playing it is Tyra Banks under makeup. And she's the one explaining the history of the company. And then you see the head of the company, Chairman L.C. Clench, played by Jeffrey Jones.
Not been able to avoid controversial figures in
controversial
any episode?
Because
the
world is horrible.
The world
is the reason why.
We'll come back around to that when we come to the ride closing.
Or not Jeffrey Jones. I don't know.
Jeffrey Jones, of course, had a child pornography charge.
No worse than that.
Oh, yeah. It's,
I think taking photos in a shed.
Anyway.
But
if you
can't pick, it's the guy, it's the principal from Ferris
Bueller.
Mr.
Rooney
very sad that he did bad things because he was so great in many 80s and 90s films. Howard the Duck.
He's in a lot of stuff. He still worked at. He still worked after, too, which, anyway.
This is insane.
Chairman Clench.
He played Chairman Kledge. And then the two alien scientists, Dr. Femus, is played by Kathy Najimy?
This is how I can tell you love this ride. You said Dr. Femus without any, like, attitude or anything. Just very earnest. And then Dr. Femus.
And then, of course, the instigator, the one who makes everything go wrong, Spinlock, portrayed by the great Kevin Pollak.
Kevin Pollak is Spinlock.
Who we fucks
need to get
up.
We need to get Kevin on the show to talk about Spinlock.
I bet we could get Kevin on the show to talk about.
He
Spinlock.
Took his fedora off to he portray off alien to Spinlock.
So after they tell you a little bit about the history of the ride, you go to like a second pre-show area with Sir, the simulated intelligence robotics that is portrayed by Tim Curry, the great Tim Curry. And then he has like two teleportation tubes there with an adorable animatronic named Skippy, an adorable alien who they would sell lots of stuffed animals of. And he demonstrates the technology and takes delight in torturing Skippy by using this technology on him and teleports him from one tube to another tube where he's all like fried like a Looney Tune after they've been shot with a cannon.
I have a Skippy toy as well from Parkstars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I should have added that earlier.
You can buy the toys, huh? We can't. Yeah. You didn't live the experience.
I'm sorry. I would like a... What is it? What's Kevin Pollak's character name?
Spinlock?
I would love a Spinlock toy.
Oh, man.
Do you have Spinlock?
No, there weren't any alien action figures. Oddly
that
enough.
Sucks.
I wish.
Dr. Femus, the Kathy and Jimmy character, wears this very odd, like, plastic or tin-looking dress. Like, I would like to have the full... I'd like to have her weird... shiny space dress.
It's like a space dress, but the design is kind of like when there is a nurse in Downton Abbey, when there was a matronly nurse and they're wearing like a tent.
Yes, really fans out.
But it's in space.
So, hey, if you don't know the ride that we were talking, if we have not, by now I have not convinced you to look up a ride-through of it.
Yeah,
check out Dr. Femus's space dress.
So after Tim Curry fucks around with Skippy for a while, and then the thing is he teleports Skippy, gets fried, and then he's like, the best thing is like you can pause the teleportation. So then Skippy disappears and he's just in the air. He's just kind of like hovering between.
Like Mike TV and Willy Wonka.
Yeah, like Mike TV. That's
Particles.
Perfect. Yeah. And then there is footage of Dr. Femus and Spinlock telling you what's about to happen, that one of you is going to get transported to their planet, and then Chairman Clench bursts in and he says, no, I'm going to transport to them. And they're like, all right, dude.
What is interesting is that that's supposed to be the better scenario, but if you think about it, transporting Geoffrey Jones into a room full of children is a lot less scary. A lot more scary, than transporting the alien.
Who are all locked in place.
Who are all locked in
place.
Whose
mothers cannot reach them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's. I think there's another... Maybe you and I just both had a bad feeling about Geoffrey Jones already in 1994. Maybe that's... maybe we're just... The universe was sending us a signal. You didn't get, Jason.
You saw a clip of the pre-show, you would know that Chairman Clench, you know, did not... get to the head of this company ethically. I mean, you don't make that many space dollars being an ethical businessman.
There's,
you know?
There's weird implications of what else excess tech did.
Yeah.
One of the things that their company does is like planetary restructuring, which implies like blowing up planets, I think.
Yeah. There's a whole list. I should have written it down, but yeah, there's a whole list of terrible things that this company is up to.
Little Easter egg, there is like a receipt or invoice from Excess Tech in the collector's office in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
So the Tyvon collection did business with
Excess
Tech?
Yeah, they did business. There's a billing. There's a carbon copy.
There is some real great little Easter eggs in that Guardians ride for Disney fans.
You're looking at the collection of Benicio del Toro, and there's a lot of odd imaginary.
And believe it or not, the collector's a big Disney Parks fan.
Yeah.
So he's got Figment in one of his little cases. Anyway, side note.
So then you're loaded. Yeah, you're loaded into this theater, and you're strapped in. These harnesses like come down all at once, like very slowly lower into this theater full of people. And, you know, the film starts to play. I think maybe it's in the room where, like, the film is like, all right, we're going to transport one of you.
That's where it's explained that Chairman Clench, we will not be transported, but Chairman Clench will come to us. Which is a very odd part of the ride where he says, no, if only one of you came, I could only meet one of you. But instead, I can shake each hand. I don't know what he's... after this whole,
I don't know,
the drama of Chairman Clinch wants to meet us.
Yeah, they don't really set that up of like why he's so hell bent. I mean,
he's very much like a politician who's like, I want to roll up my sleeves and go to a diner and shake some hands.
It's very weird. It's unexplained, but
Dr. Femis is trying to reconfigure the machine for this change. And then Spinlock goes like, no, fuck it. Just do it. We got to do it. Spinlock messes everything up.
Oh, it's his fault.
And
okay.
Because a planet gets between the teleportation signal. They transport Clinch to another planet. And then they're like, oh, we got to get him out of there. We got to get him out. We got to get into Earth. And they're like, well, there's this life form. It looks about right. And he's just do it. It's him. It's him. And then they transport him into a teleportation tube, and that's when you realize, like, I think
they got the wrong alien.
Yeah, there's a joke where it's like, since when does Clinch have wings? And it's like, it is a monster. It is a monster
scary
from a
child's
nightmare.
Yeah.
It's scary as shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually partially obscured by like fog a lot of the time, which just makes it even more frightening.
Does it appear in the tube kind of like screaming and writhing around?
Oh, it sure does.
It breaks out. Okay.
Yeah, and then the glass, like, they do a cool effect. Like, a lot of the fear in this ride comes from like classic like theatrical effects, like mm-hmm. playing the audio from different angles, a lot of smoke and mirrors type of stuff, and then like the tube is empty and the power goes out, and so like the implication being the alien. This monster alien is crawling around the room.
Mm-hmm. And they had to, now the fact that he has wings is one of the things that they had to change when they shut it down, because that was like a lost story point. They had to show that the alien has wings to let you know how it's flapping around and flying from one part of the theater to the other. This was one of the things that a lot of people, like, the problems that this ride had and the story issues kind of stemmed from that they wanted to do the movie Alien. And
yeah.
That's an alien that you've seen, that you understand. You don't need the backstory because you're coming in aware of the franchise. And a lot of the issues that this ride had is that they had to, like, reverse engineer and tell you all this stuff about excess tech and since when does it have wings. They had to explain the alien to you in a way they wouldn't have had to with the xenomorph.
Okay. This sounds like a note that is parodied in Hollywood movies a lot, of just like, well, this character's at his house and then he's having lunch with his boss. What happens in between? Like, how does he get to the restaurant?
Sure.
And it's like, who gives a shit? Like, the alien can climb. I just solved it. I fixed it. The alien can climb.
Because the xenomorph has, like, limbs, like, yeah. long limbs that, like, can make him climb, or her climb.
But this also, like, this alien, like, the model of it, it's, like, got, like, a dozen legs, and it's got giant claws, and it's got wings. It's like, okay, it can get around. The theater's not that big.
Another important thing to note in terms of theme park exposition is that nobody is paying attention whatsoever. Only psycho little kids who are going to start a podcast 20 years later have heard the words excess tech or Dr. Femis or any of this bullshit.
Future
Imagineers, just remember, no one is paying attention.
It is funny because how many people have done, like, this thing was open for how many years? 8 years?
Just under 10 years.
If you were to
9 or 10 years.
Give a test to every dad who went on this ride, do you recognize this logo, the excess tech logo? What is the percentage of dads who would know what that is? Is it
2%? It's not even the main logo of the ride. It's a secondary logo.
No, I know that. I'm
logo.
Just saying, if you were to give all this iconography and all these different things in the backstory, and like, would a dad ever remember anything? Would he remember Spinlock? Show
my
him a photo of Spinlock.
The number of times.
Yeah, but your
I
dad is a weirdo. My
dad
went on it. I don't know. If I go, hey, Dad, you know who Spinlock is? He would not know what I was talking about.
Like, frankly, I remember seeing this face right after I saw my son weeping openly in public.
But that was another one of my favorite activities with this ride, is standing in the gift shop, which was full of stuff I bought or wanted to buy, and watching people exit. And I would just watch people crying, leaving, just watching scared children leave this ride. And I remember my family, like me and my mom talked to like some of the employees once. We're like, hey, do a lot of people come out really scared of that ride? And they're like, all day long, all day, every day.
Yeah, they got constant complaints from people because they didn't know how scary this thing was. And their child would be traumatized.
It was, I mean, it just made it that much better. Like, there's never been, like, a better, again,
yeah, I mean,
budget
it's,
scary
ride. It's just such an odd thing to have it in Disney.
And that's what adds to it. I mean, Halloween Horror Nights has nothing on this ride. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah. You know what you're getting into there. This is, like, it's a fucking convention center. The setup is you're going into a lobby.
It is a great misdirect center. Because you're in yeah. Disney and Tomorrowland, and it's so bright and cheery. And
it's
then
right
you
off
go
of
and,
the hub, too.
Yeah.
It's right there.
So you
like
can
you're
see Cinderella's castle, and
yeah.
then you're about to get eaten.
Yeah. yeah. It's. I think it's pretty so crazy. That story's crazy to me, that it was effective, that for as much as we, you know, we, yeah, we're like, we were too scared to go on it, it really did, like, mess kids up. I am curious if, yeah. like, if people, if there was, like, legitimate psychological
I'm sure.
damage for people.
I mean, I gotta think. So
pretty
so,
amazing. And I just like that it was, like, a bold thing. I like that they did something
too.
Very different
yeah.
Yeah.
than they'd ever done before. It's, like, yeah, noticeably different than any other attraction in
the
history of Disney World.
The next big thing that happens in the ride, they send a maintenance person in, and so there's, like, this is, again, another smoke and mirrors trick where it's, like, someone is in the rafters above the theater, and there's, like, a light that moves so it looks like a flashlight walking around, and they go to repair it, and then he has, like, a night vision camera on that he's wearing, and, like, on the one screen, you once he plugs it back in, you see what he sees, and it's the monster, and the monster eats him. Multiple people die in this ride, like, and yeah. this guy dies yeah. horrifically. He is screaming. They drop droplets of water on you as if it's his blood, as if it's his fluids.
That's pretty crazy.
They yeah. use the droplets of water to be the breaking glass too. Like, when the monster breaks out, they spray water at you, so it feels like you got sprayed with, like, little shards of glass. Like, it's really wild. And then,
did
yeah,
you still like when you? Do you remember specifically, like, first time, second time, third time? Like, were you able to brace yourself? How bad was it the first time?
I think every trip, the first time, I would be scared because I would forget stuff. Mm-hmm. And then after the re-rides, I would just, like, I just liked all the beats of the ride. I also, like to laugh at everyone who had it, but I like to scream. Ooh. I remember talking to people like, I've been on this before, and they're like, no. And I'm like, it's great.
Let
it's
me have,
be great.
Let me ask you this. Did you have a secret fantasy that you would get eaten?
I mean, oh, maybe. I mean, I've always longed for death's sweet touch.
That's what
I've
I mean.
Always longed to touch the edge.
No, I know. So I was wondering if you were like, this is the time it happens.
This is the time it happens. I feel like there is, and I can't remember if I read that, there's like one broken seat. There's always one broken seat with like an excess cover on it. I forget. But like they left a lot of the excess. I mean, they reused a lot of the stuff for Stitch. We haven't even gotten to the Stitch.
I know.
As well, we shouldn't. And so then Four eventually hour. The power comes back on. They lure the alien back into the tube. This is at the very end when you get the fullest view of him. And he's the alien is screaming. There's flashing lights everywhere. There's he's leaning through the broken glass. And then they slide the tube up. And I think they're like, they don't even try to teleport him out of there. They just, like, full power, he's going to explode, and then he, like, explodes. Which gets me to another thing. He explodes right as the tube starts to close, and they do spray the water again. So, like, you got the
it's like you got alien goo and
you got alien
blood
goo.
And parts.
And there's also some piped-in dialogue as if it's audience members saying it. And at that point, like, when you first see the alien, there's a very faint cry of someone goes like, oh, what is this, my mother-in-law? And then at the very end, when the alien explodes, someone goes, oh, my mouth was open. Like, this is these weird 90s comedy gags.
It's a real, like, theater actor. Man, my mouth was open.
Yeah, it's a real hammy joke. Yeah, really. And then,
a
like,
New York
they,
tourist.
I forget what the closing lines, but, like, Dr. Femus and Spinlock come on the screen. They do not address the fact that Chairman Clench is stranded on a strange planet and probably dead. He's probably dead or injured.
Depending on the atmosphere.
Yeah, depending.
If he can breathe that or not.
They say, like, and at that point, they're not even sorry. They're like, well, the future, you know, you gotta break some eggs to get to the future. Like, there, I forget what the line is. Probably another play on excess. And then the lights come up and you leave, having survived what is essentially a traumatic experience.
You try to walk out with your knees shaking.
With your knees shaking.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you can manage to not faint and on your steps to the gift shop.
I mean, besides, like, yeah, I mean, I saw some kids coming off crying, but most people were, like, laughing going off. You know, most people were like, wow, that was crazy. Like, that was great. And
in a better, in, like, a better area that was more appropriate for it, I think it would have been a big hit. Like, if it was in a Universal park or something, I think, because this is a beloved attraction, actually. Like, as much as this thing got, because it, you know, gets ripped on for being scary, it's just because people weren't expecting it, and kids are expecting a fun, much more pleasant experience at Disney.
Also, long lines. Like, once all that Tomorrowland stuff, like that Tomorrowland, everything was pretty popular there, except Carousel of Progress, which is slow and for old people, and I still love it. And the People Mover, which never stops running, so there's rarely a line because you just walk into the car. So
I agree. Oh boy, I've been transported to 94 Tomorrowland right now. I loved it there.
So eventually this ride, but eventually they're like, this is, people are complaining too much, and they, I mean, I don't know what the hourly capacity of it was either. I'm not sure if it was huge. It always had long lines, but they did close it in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And
why is the quiz? Is it because of the...
Well, there's two schools of thought.
It's a mix that it was, like, too scary, and then also, like, it didn't help that a child molester was one of the main characters, and a villain, a sinister villain, leering at you.
I'm guessing it had more to do, because you can redo a video.
Yeah, you can refilm that.
You can refilm. You get, who was a villain of the time? Who was, like, a character actor who was evil, who should have, in 2003...
Willem Dafoe.
Billy Zane.
Oh, Billy Zane. Well, Dafoe,
that's a little
terrific.
Late. That's a little late.
Yeah.
I mean, Nick Cage would have been a get.
Sure.
He's probably an A-lister. Probably wouldn't have put all that makeup on.
Who knows?
On
maybe
on
he's a big Disney Parks fan.
Who should have been Clench? If you could recast Clench, now would be a mocap thing. Man, now Clench would be terrifying.
Oh, it would all be mocap, and it would all be a simulator. And
Yeah.
So
they'd mess it up.
What was I going to say? I think that, like, this is an area, too, now they've talked about putting, like, a virtual reality Wreck-It Ralph thing in. Because it's a small area. So,
it's a small theater. I mean, and it's like, it's built into the infrastructure of other stuff, like the People Mover track and multiple gift shops. So, like, they kind of can't totally destroy it. They just keep reusing this theater. They keep trying to figure out how to reuse the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's limited in what they can do with it. Well, which is why they closed the ride and gave it this overhaul, an underwhelming overhaul. That is called Stitch's Great Escape. And if you had to synopsize this ride, it would be everything we just described, but with Stitch. And
it's wacky.
The Tim Curry robot has a police uniform and a beard now.
And he's nice.
And he's nice.
And the projections on the screen, or the film segments, are all animated.
Instead of the alien dripping his slime on you, Stitch burps a chili dog smell in your face.
Yeah.
That is
the
main headline. When you, a lot of different theme park websites and lists and podcasts, a lot of theme park media has declared this the worst attraction in all of Disney World. And the crux of the argument is always Stitch burps chili dog.
Not like, it's not fun. It's not pleasant. It's not fun.
I mean,
you listen to the audience; they're all just like,
if you like Stitch, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like, why? I mean, Stitch, Lilo and Stitch was like a pretty big hit, right?
And it's like the one thing that's like survived from that era of Disney animation that people like.
Yeah,
the Treasure Planet era,
the Home on the Range,
the home. Yeah, Lilo and Stitch is the one thing I think people actually
Stitch
do have affection for.
I do find it a very endearing
movie. Yeah, it's cute.
But this is, they very much were like, all right, let's take out the family stuff, and the Ohana means family. Family means no one gets left behind. Let's get rid of all that.
Yeah, the heart
let's get
of the
Stitch.
Movie.
Yes.
Let's get the alien
no
scientists
Lilo.
Who torture him. but not like torture like the old alien scientists who torture people.
No.
It's like Stitch being a goofball.
I'll admit this. I've never been on this one either.
I have not either. I think I've been to.
And I've been to Disney.
Been to Disney World, yeah.
It's just you're too. It's there's too much stuff to do in Disney World. Both times right. I've gone in the last 10 years, it's like, well, am I going to go on Stitch's Great Escape or go on Space Mountain or
also,
go over to Animal Kingdom?
Like, I would imagine your girlfriend, similar to my wife, who does not have the pain tolerance that I do. I need to experience every horrible attraction. She would love to never again go on Journey into Imagination or sit through the... I mean, this isn't a bad attraction, but the American Adventure. I remember her just staring daggers at me.
That rules. The American Adventure rules.
Lindsay liked the American Adventure, so...
again, this is the climax of the show is Mark Twain and Benjamin Franklin
shaking hands,
poorly shaking hands.
It's great.
I'm not gonna blame my wife here. I'll say that.
No, it's not. I didn't go on, and it was that nothing to do with Lindsay. We were like under the gun to get other stuff done. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It does feel. I mean, it's very melancholy for me when I've ridden it. It's been very because the old ride meant so much to me,
Hello,
and I was just
darkness,
like,
"This, my
this
old
seems
friend.
Like a friend I used to recognize, but it's so much is gone." Similar,
same harnesses, same tube, it's all
same,
the same stuff.
So much of it they barely changed. And the other thing is the timekeeper. I used to love the timekeeper too. I didn't ride that as much because it was just a movie and it was a little long. Mm-hmm. I have never ridden the Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. I don't even know what it is. And just because I'm like, no, absolutely not.
Two, I think, pretty dynamic, interesting new attractions, not based on other intellectual property. Alien Encounter and the Timekeeper.
The Timekeeper.
Which we'll cover at some point, I am sure. But the these were replaced by these, I think... Yeah, these very lame, quick, shove them in kind of attractions based on the only popular movies Disney had at the time. Yeah, that Monsters, Inc. thing seems so... I guess they are for little children. This is what I'm forgetting.
I don't think people like them. The other thing is when I've ridden Stitch, kids still kind of cry and scream because it's still pitch black a lot of the time noises
and
are coming
invasive.
At them.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's touching you.
We'll do Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, which I did do, and I scared the shit out of me as a little kid.
Yeah,
I was so scared.
Don't like those snakes.
I don't even like Trek 4D when they poke you in the back, when those seats
like
poke you in the back.
Do people like this? Do people like... It's tough to be a bug when, like, the bugs all...
Crawl? Yeah,
on
I
your
hate
butt
that.
At the end. I
hate
anything like this.
It's invasive.
I don't think I'm scared of it. Yeah, it's
but
just
people
the,
like...
You're being molested by these rats.
People like... being scared. Some people like being scared, and that's what's different about the three of us is that most theme park people, well, not most, I shouldn't say, but a lot of theme park, there's a big contingent now of Halloween Horror Nights people that like this. They like being touched by college students in masks. They like constantly going, like, I don't like that. I like a 6-minute haunted house, the old House of Horrors at Universal. I had a headache after it. I was so like, stop yelling at me, college students.
I have a story I'll save for another day on that. But yeah, friends made me go through that once and it sucked. And then I got the biggest fuck you at the end of it. And I would have saved that for another episode.
We're already
scream
over.
Freaks who are taking over our nice, cute attractions. Get out of here. You're a bad element. And look, at least Universal shoves them into the night, the unruly nighttime.
We're
you
nice.
Keep these people, these weirdos, out of my daytime parks.
Yeah, we're nice boys who want a pleasant experience.
We want a nice park.
Or at the very least, if you're going to make it scary, spend a lot of money on it and get some character actors in there.
more indelible characters like
or
Femus.
Just Tim Curry. Put Tim Curry in there. Big influence for me, Tim Curry.
Sure,
real fun.
Yeah. It's just this isn't about this ride, but I'm in my the fact that the Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor was a ride where you can text in a joke and then they'll tell the joke you texted. What an unpleasant! I might as well say it now because I'd love to not do an episode about the Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor.
I think if we're doing,
sure we will.
If we're doing this in 3 years, I think we'll have already gotten to Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor.
Be scraping the bottom of the
barrel.
That
will be. We'll be doing that on the roof of one of our apart. That'll be our like the Beatles. That'll be our last episode as Monsters Inc. Last floor. We're doing it on a roof for a crowd.
You know that it's, you know that it's been rough. Other. Our relationship, our personal relationships have frayed, and
people gather down. Well, they're doing it one more time.
Jason's got some cool new girlfriend dressed like Dr. Femus. We don't like.
She likes to dress this way. Really, I didn't tell her. It was all right.
She was dressed this way when we met.
She's sitting in the corner for recordings.
We're both very normal and healthy together.
I think this is probably an attraction where we should do the thing that we often forget to do, which is plus it up, keep it as is, burn it to the ground for insurance money. Because that it's a big question. I don't know what you do. The rumor is, like you said, that this Wreck-It Ralph attraction is coming in, although there's sort of the rumored issue with that is that there's a really amazing Super Mario Kart attraction on the way.
And they don't want to look like shit
with that, because this would be in the rumor is it's a ride based on Sugar Rush, the
go-kart game that they play,
Mario
Kart-esque
game that is in Wreck-It Ralph. So is that sort of does that end up being a lesser version of what
probably yes
has
well played? Also, like, those VR sets that parks are experimenting with putting on people, not only is it time consuming to put them on people and secure them, the technology outpaces innovation outpaces like people's expectations. So, like, if it looks good for 6 months, it's going to look like shit in a year.
Yeah.
You know, and also people can do it from their home. People can buy VR for their home. So you have to compete with that.
Right.
Yeah. I always think that stuff is weird. Like, the idea that, I think some fun rides came out of Disney wanting to do video games in the parks. Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters, and I really like Midway Mania, but I think you can't go nuts with that. I did not like the Knott's Berry Farm video game ride journey to the voyage to the Iron Reef.
That was, that's bad.
That's a headache-inducing ride.
Sure.
Yeah, not fun at all.
So, this video game stuff, I don't know, and the VR, I don't know. I'm really not sure what you do here, but I bet the idea has occurred to you guys as well, that with the Disney Fox merger, well, we talked about it on the
last show. They could do the original version on the Nostromo with a Xenomorph, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, if we're doing the scale, like, I would say bulldoze the one in Tomorrowland, build the original version, but let's get crazy with it. So plus it up. Mm-hmm. Like, have people in there always that are plants, maybe, that get, like, sucked out of their seats or bloodied up, or, like, have half the audience kind of, like have part of the things move, so like the seats go like people go missing, so like lights go back on and maybe the person next to you is gone, dad is gone.
Have the Prometheus the weird Prometheus god creatures
that's great
in there. Have and then of course fold Spinlock into the Wayland Yutani mythology.
Yeah, Spinlock.
Everything is alien, but also Spinlock and Dr. Femus are there.
And make Ridley Scott do another one of these alien movies, but Spinlock is in it. And he's interacting with Fassbender's, David? Is that the character's name?
Yeah, with David.
The robot character. So put David on the ride, too. David is out talking to you before the ride. And then, Spinlock, knocks him over, gets him wet because he's a robot and that's bad. And, he starts to short circuit or something. Have a little levity before the horror.
Paul Reiser? Does Paul Reiser go in?
Yeah, Paul Reiser goes in. Ripley goes in.
I think live actors. That was what I thought. Like a live Ripley, C2 3D. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff you could do. I think the grand finale, you do it like the... I don't know why they didn't do this. This would have been good in the original Alien Encounter. Like in the movies, you blow the alien out of an airlock. And you got fans blasting.
That's great.
And that's a cool effect.
Yeah.
Big whirlwind of a whirl of wind.
Sure, yeah.
I'm very well spoken. This would be a great ride. And I think, obviously, it's tough, to set the mythology. And, I think we need to change it from Phil Hartman to Tim Curry so that we know that it's a scary ride and so that kids are... Why don't you put up a big red sign that says no kids?
There was a thing saying this attraction may be too scary and intense for young children. Mm-hmm. But people so rarely... They made it look like one of the more... board, like one of the, like, we legally have to put on this, like, fine print ride.
They say,
like,
that about everything, but not every ride made little Mikes and Scotts pee their pants.
Yeah.
And this, some, they mean business here.
Some cast members would be like, you know what this is, right? Like, you know this is super scary, right? And others would be like, hi, welcome to XS Tech. Come to our presentation. And
hey, welcome back, Jason.
Welcome back, you small little butterball. You weird, weird little butterball.
Your iHeart future Mr. Femus.
Did you get tired of riding the People Mover for an hour? Because if it's not busy at night, they'll just let you sit on it. They'll let you stay on it.
Hey, there's a hack. Yeah, that's not a People Mover hack, but a Tomorrowland Transit Authority hack.
Yeah. That's another one too, where it's like, I mean, it's great, it's still there. I love that it's still there. But last time I was there, I was like, could I rip an MP3 of the old People Mover narration and listen to it through headphones so I don't have to hear this teen? So, like, I could cue it up and have my own little experience.
Give me my old character actors.
Give me this
no
old
teens.
Man.
And then when Super you ride weird. Stitch's ride, you can put on Hurt by Johnny Cash during the ride.
Oh, yeah. Or just Spinlock. Well, I just yell thing. Spinlock's lines during the
You
Stitch
cosplay
ride.
As Spinlock, too, at most conventions.
Conventions, day jobs, whatever have you, what have you.
Day to day. When Stitch comes out, you yell, lock him up!
Lock him up. Check your privilege, Stitch Riders!
So I think we have agreed, it's somewhere between Plus It Up.
Somewhere
and
else.
The ground for insurance put
it
money. Some,
but it's ahead, it was ahead of its time, because I don't even think at this, like, Horror Nights wasn't a big thing in the mid-90s.
I think it was just
they were starting, but it was, now it's
it
a whole, it's
huge.
A phenomenon, it's the most popular thing that Universal does. People want to piss in their pants. It's not us, but people want it. So they were really kind of forward thinking in a lot of ways.
So maybe just set up a different land entirely called Piss,
piss
Land.
Piss Land. Yeah.
Trump robot can go in Piss Land too.
Also dark to, sure. Dark humor, like, again, like, dark humor, usually, like, a little bit of it in a ride is fun and different. It makes it stand out.
Like
dark
those mother-in-law humor, jokes. Nothing darker than that.
That's the seed of my getting into comedy was, like, this dark humor and then the hammy nonsense of the Adventurers Club, and it's just never gone away. And so I remain incredibly niche and unmarketable in my career.
So when you're on Marin, when you're on WTF, and he asks you who your guys are, you're going to say Spinlock?
Spinlock.
Were you a sir guy? You're a sir kind of guy? Sir.
The Colonel Puppet and the giant idol from the Adventurers Club.
Oh, yeah, and he's going to go like, yeah, no, you and I aren't so different.
You and I aren't so different. You ever do heroin? No, Mark.
Oh boy. Well, look forward to that episode coming up of WTF, and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back. We now are presenting our second edition of our now recurring segment, Animatronic of the Month. And before we get going with that, I want to congratulate the last winner of Animatronic of the Month, Striped Shirt Pirate, trying to get the key back from the dog from Pirates of the Caribbean. Thank you so much. Congratulations to you. I hope you, Animatronic, have felt some increased pride while doing your repetitive work over the last month, 2 months. I don't remember when we did this last, but feels like forever ago. But striped shirt pirates, where is a badge of honor on your striped shirt? And but now it's time to yank the badge away from you and give it to another deserving animatronic who does such excellent work every day in a Disney park somewhere on the globe. Mike, I think you're first.
Hello. My pick for animatronic of the month is Uncle Orville, the drunk man drying out in a bathtub on the Carousel of Progress. Move over, Bobby Moynihan. This is the original drunk uncle. Uncle Orville, you're great because of your Mel Blanc-voiced, out-of-tune singing, your weird Uncle Sam costume, and also being a very rare thing at Disney World, a naked robot. It's a thrill being able to see a naked relative of that character John up close. So today, I salute you, Uncle Orville. I hope you do as your brother John asks. Stop being a leech and start looking for a job.
So,
What have we determined here? In the theme of the episode, where Jason is a lot more active and agitated than usual, you just you convulsed when that began.
Well, Scott, I guess my animatronic of the month is an example that we should probably talk to each other before doing this segment, because my choice is also old Uncle Orville.
Tell us about him.
He, as Mike said, is a lazy man who spends all of his time in a bathtub, specifically wearing a giant Uncle Sam hat. He is the permanent house guest of John and his family, and he miraculously invented a system that John calls air cooling, which in this case is a giant ice cube sitting in front of a fan. And so this lazy idiot somehow invented air conditioning to make his time engaging in the sin of sloth that much more pleasant. Lazing around, enjoying cool air? Why, those are two of my favorite pastimes. So I'm also throwing in my hat into the ring for Uncle Orville. So God bless you, Uncle Orville. You're also my pick for animatronic of the month.
Wow.
So this could be a two-way race.
Yeah. Well, I think we could do the vote. We could do the vote a couple ways. We could put on the Twitter where you cast your votes, Mike's Uncle Orville and Jason's Uncle Orville. But maybe here's where we really form a little difference. Would you like to declare different years or decades of Uncle Orville?
I'll say this. Uncle Orville did change. He used to be Cousin Orville in the original, and he didn't have the Uncle Sam costume on for a while.
Oh.
So we both talked about the Uncle Sam costume. So honestly, we have to do the same
one. We have to do the same.
All right.
Because he shows up in the last segment of Carousel of Progress, but it's just a toilet flushing, as if to imply Uncle Orville now is also a house guest, but just takes long shits.
All right. Well, since I'm not taking that one, since it's just a shit sound effect and not a fully built robot. All right. So it'll be my choice versus your two. And I have a feeling one of yours is going to win, because mine is a little bit more of a point I'm making. Is this the best animatronic? I don't know, but I think it might be the most put upon. I'm talking about, from the 3D movie It's Tough to Be a Bug, the villainous animatronic Hopper. Hopper is already hated and booed by children in two different theme parks. Plus, he's straight out of Pixar's fourth worst film, according to kid film critic Lights Camera Jackson. Not to mention, he's typically most of the year stuck lifeless in the rafters of his own theater, while Disney changes out the Tough to Be a Bug theater to show trailers for things like, I don't know, their live-action reboot of Chicken Little. But the worst burden that animatronic Hopper faces is that he is cursed with a voice that most people assume is Kevin Spacey. It is not and never was Kevin Spacey. In both the attraction and the video game, Hopper is voiced by Pixar director Andrew Stanton. Stanton is a two-time Academy Award winner, the man behind Finding Nemo, WALL-E, and two episodes of Stranger Things. There is almost no animatronic with a higher pedigree of voice talent, and yet everyone assumes, Hopper, that you are voiced by a creep. So today, I raise a glass of bug juice to Hopper and his Oscar-winning, non-harassing voice. It's tough to be a bug, but it's extra tough to be animatronic Hopper.
Wow.
Wow.
Great choices all around.
Isn't it a shame that
people think that,
it's occurred to me that people think that they're getting yelled at by an animatronic Kevin Spacey, and yet it is not him, and
he
never
is
was
the
him.
Voice in the movie.
He is the voice in the movie.
Not on the ride.
Not on the ride or the game.
The grasshopper. We're all making a lot of assumptions we've assumed that you remember who Hopper was.
Mm-hmm.
We've assumed certainly that you know who John is.
He's the protagonist of Carousel of Progress. Follow throughout the years on his journey.
And he's also another character that is exactly like Jason.
Yeah.
A kindly old man in a rocking chair.
With a thick sweater.
Who's eternal.
I like the idea that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of robots, and the second time we did this, Jason and I picked the same character.
Jeez. I've been worried about the same thing.
The seventh most prominent robot on that ride.
There's 45 presidents alone, hundreds of pirates, 999 ghosts.
Sure.
And yet you managed to choose
Large man in a bathtub.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Somehow psychologically attracted to this large this man in a bathtub. Okay, well, so go to our Twitter. Go to @podcasttheride on Twitter and cast your vote for animatronic of the month. Is it Orville, Orville, or Hopper? enjoy that. The results will get back to you whenever we remember to do this again. And you've survived Podcast the Ride. Thanks for listening.
Twitter, Podcast the Ride at Twitter, at Instagram, Podcast the Ride at Gmail if you want to send us an email.
Yeah, we love getting your tweets and your comments on Instagram and your emails.
So. Give us more episode ideas because it saves us a couple of texts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And review our podcast.
Rate and review on iTunes, especially since we're the boys are off the leash. We're independent now. So
yeah, tell a friend.
Please tell friends. Yes.
Give them this disease.
Yeah.
Help build up Podcast the Ride Audio, our new audio podcast network.
Podcast Network the Ride.
Podcast Network.
Oh, that's right.
That's
all right,
the name
yes.
of our new podcast network. Podcast Network the Ride.
So please support Podcast Network the Ride. And if you want to donate to us personally, write us on Twitter and we'll give you our addresses and you can
send a check.
Say, yeah.
Or personalized
just a
check.
Couple of coins or bucks in an envelope. All right. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.